Miami.
Come on.
Alex Dono and Rashad Butler with you on 790 The Ticket. Taking you up till 9:30 tonight. Full Heat pregame. 10:30 tip-off tonight. Heat and Lakers. By the way, at halftime at the Watsco Center in Coral Gables, Miami on top of FAU, 35-26. Hope the Canes keep it rolling. Let me read this this text, Rashad, on what we were talking about with student-athlete. Why are you guys acting like these players want to hold a job or have the time? They get free food, board, and plenty of other freebies. Their parents are not paying for anything. I think they can break off a little cash for their kids. Every other student there is working and paying for food, dorms, books, etc., plus going to school full time. Stop playing a poor me song for these guys.
You go first.
Well, here's the first two thoughts I have on
okay.
it. Number one, certainly not every athlete, their parents are in position economically to even send them any money.
Bingo.
I think that's number one.
Correct.
And number two, it's not just about them having the right to hold a job. And sure, maybe not everybody wants to, you know, like work at FedEx, Kinko's or something and hold a part-time job. But also, I think it's incredibly unfair. Regardless of what you think about them needing or not needing the cash, I think it is incredibly unfair when you think about how many billions of dollars are made off of these players. Now, not for every sport. This is really the profitable sports are football and basketball. But how many billions of dollars are made off of those sports and the TV contracts for them, and how much money these coaches are making, and yet the players are not even allowed to make money off of their name or endorse things. And again, so even if you think these players might not want to like hold part-time jobs and be working at drive-through windows or whatever, you might be right for some of them. They may not want to do that, but you know, people who could actually in a normal free market make a few bucks off of endorsing something or signing some autographs are not even allowed to do that.
Now, I'm going to elaborate on the last statement you made. Now, the first statement you made, I agree 100%. The last statement, I agree too, but I'm going to elaborate even more. Now, for this texter that wrote that, picture this. Put yourself in a situation where, let's just say you are the star player or you are a pivotal player for that team. And you walk in your campus school store and you see, like, let's just say your number happens to be, let's throw out a number. Let's just say 15. And there's no name on the back of that jersey. But you know, hey, that's my jersey. And you walk up to that jersey, and let's just say you see there is a price tag on that jersey that says, let's just say $59.99, $60. Yeah. And you see that the racks aren't full, so that means that that jersey is selling. And now you start to wonder, okay, I'm struggling eating my food. I'm just putting you in this situation. I have a mother at home, works two jobs, single parent mother. I don't really have a great relationship with my dad. But for some reason, I walk in the school store and my jersey is just selling off the racks and I'm not seeing any type of kickback from that. So how would that make you feel? And I understand that that's just a small percentage of kids, whether it's at a big-time football university or a big-time basketball university. But to me, that is always going to be a problem to me, that I just don't think getting free room, board, and food and education is just going to, I guess, make me turn a blind eye to that.
Yeah.
Because where is that money going, and why can't that kid see any type of kickback from that? You know, from those jersey sales, because at the end of the day, it's his jersey. I mean, he's putting his life and his body on the line for that school, and they're making money off him. And what? Because he gets a free education, room and board. I mean, he's supposed to be cool with that. Man, get out of here. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So
get out of here.
So it's not only about like the economic part of it. It's also about what's fair. Another texter writes in, I was a student athlete in college and played baseball at one of the best baseball conferences in the nation. I didn't expect to make money. saw my coach fired. His career is over. He's not making any more money in coaching. I got an education that provided me with knowledge to make a lot of money, which now I'm doing well. It's worth not making money to me. And I think that kind of falls into a to each his own category, right?
Because exactly. Even
you remember a couple months ago when Tim Tebow came
yes.
out and actually angered a lot of people because what he said about how, like, he didn't just say, because, like, the texter put it, I thought, very respectfully, mm-hmm. saying, I didn't expect or see the need to make money.
Exactly.
Whereas Tim Tebow made it like a one-size-fits-all, like, exactly. nobody should expect to make
yes.
money. Yeah, that rubbed a lot of people the wrong
and
way.
And to me, it just goes back to the situation that you're in. And if you are in a situation where, you know, parents aren't doing that good, or if it's mother at home or dad just at home or grandmother, grandfather, it becomes very difficult to just ask that kid, oh, we're giving you free room and board and education, when that kid is actually becoming a star player for that university. Now, some people may disagree, but again, I can understand you disagreeing if you haven't been faced with that or you haven't been around players that have had to deal with that. And I grew up pretty good. I have no complaints. Grew up with a mom and a dad and a sister, two-parent household. So my college career wasn't like some of my teammates, but I played with a lot of teammates to where, I'm going to be quite honest with you guys, they couldn't even purchase a ticket to go home after the bowl game for a week and visit their family, like yeah. whether it was out of state or not. And to me, that's just unacceptable when you have this kid that is putting his life and his body on the line for the university, but yet he still can't afford a flight to go home and the school can't pay for it because, what, NCAA regulations? It's crazy.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, I have a family to feed, whereas and you know, now I've got a child, but for a lot of these mm-hmm. a lot of these athletes, like they may be feeding their parents, some of them, right?
Yep,
or at
exactly.
least in a position where they need to. So I wasn't in need of funds when I was in college the way that I am now. And when I work hard and I bust my ass, like it's nice to get something financially for that, because I know how hard these athletes work. It's not only, you know, being a student is mm-hmm. tough enough, right? Like
yep.
like getting decent grades in your classes, but, you know, to have to work your class schedule around practicing, to have to put in extra hours in the weight room, and having, you know, in the, you know, a lot of programs, these guys actually will have 8 a.m. classes and they'll have practice before that mm-hmm. in some cases, or they'll have workout sessions before that. It
yeah.
it really does become a full-time job.
And let's be quite honest, if you are playing for a university where you are playing a sport that is the school's number one moneymaker, quite frankly, school becomes second to that sport. I mean, you can hear on TV that academics is number one, blah, blah, blah. Listen, I guarantee you at Alabama, at Clemson, or at Ohio State, football is number one. Like Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, they can tell you all day that, hey, we care about academics, and I'm sure they do. But at the end of the day, football and how their players perform on Saturdays is number one to them. And I guarantee you that the players understand that, and I guarantee you that the players are always going to put football first. And that goes with any university or institution where they have a dominant sport. I guarantee you in that dominant sport, those players know that school is secondary to that sport. It is
are,
what it is.
You guys are furniture.
Yeah, it is what it
you
is.
You guys are literally furniture because that you could be a top recruit. Guess what? They're getting another top recruit that might play the same position you're playing next year. So they're not really hurting. Those coaches are never hurting. That's why when the coaches leave, I understand the backlash that they get, because, yeah, a lot of these kids, they sign because they trust you. A lot mm-hmm. of parents are allowing their child to play for you, play for that university because they believe that coach is going to be there and help their young son become a young man. And all of a sudden now, when that young person wants to get some money, it's very difficult for them because they never had the resources.
Yeah.
Let's keep it a, like I always say, keep it a buck. They weren't talented in playing that sport.
Yeah.
They would not be going to that university.
Exactly.
A texter writes in on the name, image, and likeness. He says, well, my problem with this argument is that we're talking about the 1% of the 1%. Sure, Tua and Jeudy are negatively impacted, but think about the other 67 scholarship players that realistically aren't getting affected by the likeness money. Yes and no. Certainly the superstars would make a lot
Correct.
More, but for example, if they bring back the NCAA football game and you have a representation of every player,
exactly,
then there would at least be a certain amount of cash guaranteed to every, at least Power Five, if not even beyond that. So I don't think that number would be zero. Like, there's no question if you are one of the top two or three most recognizable players at your school or even in the country, you're going to be making more name, image, and likeness money than, you know,
absolutely,
than the kicker, right? Mm-hmm. But I think there would be a certain floor that every player would see something.
And listen, I understand that every player that enters a university to play for that number one sport at that school is not going to make it to the next level. But at the same time, my whole argument is I believe that they should get some kickback for what they're doing, because you know why? The school is making so much money just off that sport alone. And I understand that everyone is going to get paid differently due to their likeness and due to their stardom. But at the same point, if that program or if that sport is bringing in the school the majority of the money, just give the rest of those kids something that to where at least they can purchase a flight home. Because like I said, when I was in school, to me, I looked at it as very shameful that the university couldn't afford or wasn't allowed to at least send kids home for that week break to just visit their family. And a lot of those kids had to stay in the dorms where no one was in the dorms during that time, because kids were actually home for the break and they couldn't go home because they couldn't afford it. And to me, that's not right when these kids are out here putting everything on the line for this university, and they're making the university a lot of money.
Let's get to some headlines.
This is WAXYAM South Miami and WSFSFM HD2 Miramar, a radio.com sports station.
Well, DJ Vasilich just made a layup for the Canes. Miami on top of FAU 48-33, about 15 and a half minutes to go in the second half of the Watsco Center. Rodney Miller for the Canes with 10 points and 5 rebounds so far. So Canes on top. Now the lead cut to 13, but Miami is on top at home against the FAU Owls. Miami Heat taking on the Lakers tonight in Los Angeles. 10:30 tip-off with pregame starting at 9:30 with Zaslow. Justice Winslow today entered the NBA's concussion protocol. He collided heads with Paul Millsap on Tuesday night in Denver. Florida Panthers are off tonight. They'll be back in action tomorrow evening. Miami Dolphins will face the Colts in Indy on Sunday. That'll be a 4:05 p.m. kickoff, a 12 noon pregame on 560 The Joe. So the NCAA ruled out Memphis basketball star James Wiseman, but he is playing tonight, Rashad, because a local judge put a hold on that ruling. So until, I don't know if that's appealed or they take another look at it, he is able to play tonight while they put a hold on that. And, of course, you got the whole Chase Young thing we've been talking about. And speaking on Chase Young, here's my prediction. And you know what? This is not even that bold of a prediction.
Okay.
I think I oversold it a little bit. But my prediction, by 7 o'clock tomorrow night, we will have a new sack leader in college football, and it's going to be Miami's Gregory Rousseau.
Okay.
He's only a sack and a half behind Chase Young, and Chase Young can't play tomorrow.
Well, you know what's going to make this very interesting is if they rule out Chase Young for the entire season.
Oh, then Russo's going to lead the country, guaranteed.
Yeah.
Guaranteed, because I think, like, the next guy has, like, because it's Chase Young with 13.5, Greg Russo with 12. I think the next guy has, like, 8.5 or 9
sacks.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
It's a pretty decent gap.
Yeah, it is.
And as we talked about earlier, Louisville does not have a very good offensive line.
No.
And they do like to run the football a lot, but they are going to be in some passing downs, third downs. I think Russo is going to eat tomorrow.
Same here.
So I think he's going to have at least 2 sacks, and he's going to pass Chase Young tomorrow. I think
okay, that's fair.
2 or 3 sacks from Greg Russo. And I think by the end of the night, we've got a new sack leader, and he's going to be wearing green. Because apparently Miami's wearing, I don't like this, orange jersey, green pants. I don't. That's my least favorite combo.
Yeah. I agree. You know, I don't think I ever wore that when I was at Miami. No. I think the craziest combination that I wore was 2005. We played Georgia Tech, and we had the all green, but I think our right or left sleeve may have been, like, orange.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
That was, like, the special edition jersey, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
And then only one time in school history since the 1960s, we wore the throwback with the two hurricane flags on the helmet.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Correct.
One.
Uh-huh. That
yeah.
was during USC following Hurricane Wilma in 2005. Oh. So those were the only two, I guess, crazy jerseys I wore when I was at University of Miami. But yeah, I'm not a fan of the orange tops and the green pants. That just doesn't look
right. Well,
they're
doing green on green, actually.
Okay. Yeah, I like green on green.
See, I'm not a big fan of that. I don't know. Okay. What do you think, Vlad?
I like green on green.
All green?
I told Rashad that. I told him that before.
I like green on green.
I ain't like the green on green.
Nah, I don't like it.
Okay.
I mean, I don't like the orange on green either. Like the orange, because I've seen them wear the orange top and the green. I don't like that either. But I think green on green to me is the worst. I don't like it.
My all-time favorite at Miami was white on white.
I like that.
Yeah. I love the white on white. I know when I played, we had some legendary games with the white on white. I know Virginia Tech 2005.
Yes.
We went up to Blacksburg. We wore the white on white and took care of business. So I'm a huge fan of the white on white. The white on white we wore when we almost lost to Boston College, but again,
I remember that
epic game. Yeah, the white on white. I love it. Mm-hmm.
You know, I wonder if there's anybody out there geeky enough that has done like a spreadsheet of Miami's win loss record with every combination.
Hmm.
Like
absolutely,
you would think that
it is someone.
That human being exists, right?
Yeah, he has to, or she has to.
Agree. They're in like a basement somewhere. Although we don't really have basements in South Florida, so maybe I don't know. They're in like a den somewhere. Like there's got to be, and I hope texters, if you're aware of this existing, 67974, or send it to me on Twitter at Alex Dono or to. Well, what's your Twitter handle? Rashad Jamal B?
Uh-huh, and Jamal is spelled J-A-M-A-A-L.
Like, somebody's got to tweet us with the link.
I agree. It has to be out there.
If anybody has made a spreadsheet of Miami's win-loss record in orange on white, orange on orange, green on white, green on green, orange on green, like, white on white. Because if we come to find out that Miami is, like, you know, 48-1 all time in white on white. We got to wear that more often.
I agree.
Wait, I gotta ask this question.
Yeah,
you and both NCAA and NFL.
Okay.
Do you guys really believe in like uniform, like stuff like that? Like if there's a uniform you guys wearing and you've won, is there like a superstition? Like you know, a superstition with that?
Yeah, it is.
Wow. Really? As I'm that type of fan.
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Like, I'm a lunatic. Yeah. But yeah, if the players feel that way.
If the players feel that way, and I'm like, wait a minute. So like you're very happy. I know we've talked about this many times.
Mm-hmm.
The white on white when you were at the U, you loved it.
Yeah, I was a fan.
You played well. Even when you were the Texans, I mean, that you know, you guys always had maybe a special uniform if you're playing like a Thursday night game or the color scheme.
Yeah, so the worst combination that we had when I played for the Texans, we played a Thursday night game, and this was back when Thursday night football games were, well didn't start until, I want to say, after Thanksgiving of some sort.
We played
the Denver Broncos back when they had Jay Cutler and Brandon Marshall, and we wore red on red. And to me, I hated it, and I joked with everyone. I said, listen, we look like a bunch of, like, Heinz ketchups out there running around. It was the worst.
Oh, man.
So my favorite combination for Houston, ironically, was white on white. And we called it Liberty White. And we usually wore it, usually we wore it to open up the season. So we always wore it for week one if we played a week one game to open up the season at home.
Wow. Yeah.
White on white.
I think the worst color scheme might have been the Seahawks.
Oh, the green?
I agree. Green.
Just like it, yeah. And I can see how maybe somebody, when they were coming up with it, like on a computer program, thought this might look kind of cool. But then when you actually saw it on TV, it hurts your eyes to watch it.
Like, seriously, I agree.
When you wear that highlighter color, it literally, it made me wish I was colorblind for one night. Just why it was tough. It was really tough watching that. Texter writes in, ask all college athletes if they would be willing to be in the NCAA video game for free. I'm sure the majority would say yes. This is our dream as kids. Well, Ed O'Bannon said no.
Yeah.
But you know, I think
I disagree with that.
I think probably the majority would a slight majority would say yeah, but that doesn't make it right in my eyes.
Well, to me, I think back then when a lot of us didn't know any better, I would say the majority would have said yes. But now understanding the world we live in with social media and how kids understand, listen, I am a brand now, first and foremost, I'll be highly pressed to believe that any kid now in this era would say, you know what? Yeah, I want to beat it and not get paid, because kids now are smarter than how we were growing up.
Did you ever play the game back then and, like, put yourself in a quarterback or something?
Not at quarterback, but I was very I was smiling from cheek to cheek, like, wow, like, that's me right there. You know,
awesome.
Knowing that, you know, I couldn't see the name on the back of the jersey or anything like that. So I disagree with that text, but I feel as if back during my era, you probably would have had more athletes that would have been, you know what, put me in the video game, don't pay me. But now, in this era with social media and kids understanding that they are a brand, yeah, that's not going to fly. Not going to fly.
67974 is how you text us. Alex Dono, Rashad Butler, Vlad Lusant with you here on 790 The Ticket. We continue till 9:30. Taking you up till 9:30 tonight on 790 The Ticket. Right up to pregame for Heat Lakers tonight. You can catch it on this radio station. Man, what a time to be alive. Heat Lakers. What are the I think the Lakers are favored by close to 10 points tonight, the last I saw. Maybe like 8 to 10 points, something like that. God,
I'll jump on the Heat easy.
Yeah, I feel the same.
Lakers' first home game after a road trip. You know, you teams don't usually start off well. After a road trip, a long road trip.
Feeling good about the Heat tonight. And they better come through, because I'm going to stay up very late to watch this game. I'm going to stay up very, very late to watch them come through. This is a real disappointment for me, and I think for a lot of Dolphin fans, if you get my angle on this. Patrick Mahomes will start against the Texans, which, like, you could say that's great news for the NFL.
The Texans?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Titans.
Against the Titans. Okay. My bad. So Patrick Mahomes will start against the Titans this weekend, which, you know, he's the golden boy. Great news for the league. It only took him 2 weeks to recover from a dislocated kneecap, which is just superhuman. But it's so disappointing because it robs us of the Matt Moore versus Ryan Tannehill matchup.
Yes.
That would have been superb.
It would have.
I mean, selfishly, as a Miami Dolphin fan, to think about our former disappointing starting quarterback against our former gunslinging backup quarterback going head-to-head. That would have been a lot of fun. But that Mahomes story is crazy, that apparently he recovered so quickly because he's double-jointed.
Correct. So when he dislocated his kneecap, he did not sustain any significant ligament damage around the knee.
Which kind of takes Andy Reid off the hook, because everyone was mad. Everyone was mad at him for calling that quarterback sneak.
And you know what? I don't understand why, because that is such a freak of a accident. Because I've been playing football, organized football, since I was the age of 12, and I can guarantee you, I've never saw a quarterback or anyone get hurt during the quarterback sneak. Now, there's been guys that have maybe had their legs, you know, someone fell on their legs or ankles and things of that nature, but never to the fact that to where no one was getting up injured from a quarterback sneak. So
right.
I really didn't get it, and I really thought it was so much of an overreaction by the public. But yeah, Patrick Mahomes just being double jointed in his knees is freakish, very, very freakish.
I mean, there are just like there are certain athletes that, whether it be just through insane conditioning and genetics, like a LeBron James, who doesn't, I mean, you know, the last couple of years starting to be a little bit more so, but for the most part in his prime, the guy just never got hurt.
Yeah.
And then there are others like Patrick Mahomes, who are just double jointed and just so flexible that they're not going to suffer the same amount of injuries. So I mean, it's good for him. He's coming back. You know, you think about everything that's at stake tomorrow afternoon when Alabama takes on LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Huge national championship implications, college football playoff implications, Heisman Trophy implications. And then it's going to be a very difficult decision, I think, for South Florida football fans who are Hurricanes fans but also Dolphins fans. You better have a two-screen setup tomorrow, because isn't every Miami Dolphin fan approaching that game thinking, pretty decent chance we're watching Miami's next starting quarterback play in that game?
Correct. What's going to drive me crazy is if you have one quarterback that plays extremely better than the next, then you're going to have that fan base on Twitter saying, I told you so.
Yes.
And that's why I want both quarterbacks to play just as good. I believe that Tua is going to play better because I just believe he is the better quarterback. But I really do hope that Joe Burrow is able to have the same success he's been having all season long, because I just don't want to see the Tua fans just say, I told you so, because I am a Tua fan. And I'm not going to say I told you so, because, again, I just believe that the proof is in the pudding. I mean, he has been playing better than Joe Burrow as far as his entire body of work. But I really do hope that both quarterbacks do play very, very well. But I got to go with Alabama. I think Alabama's going to win at least by 10, maybe more. I just think that Tua is just a cut above Joe Burrow, and I just think that he's going to be able to continue to pick apart that LSU defense like he's done every defense so far this year, in my opinion. Now I know some people may disagree, but that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, Burrow, he's getting – there's so much momentum and hype behind this guy. Mm-hmm. And I not to say that everything you watch doesn't have a certain bias and a slant, because when you're watching – like, because I spent some time earlier this week watching film breakdowns with commentary – but still, like, the people who make these film breakdowns are still pick and choosing which plays they want to use to break down. Mm-hmm. So there's real, unless I'm going to sit and go through every single snap that both of these guys have played this year, there's really no way to make a completely unbiased film breakdown because the film breakdowns I'm watching, they're selecting, you know, it's, I'm watching like a 20-minute video. They're selecting a handful of plays to use for each guy. So it's not a complete sample. But based on what I've watched this week, it really is splitting hairs between these two. Like, it's that close to me where, you know, Tua probably has the slightly stronger arm, where, you know, Burrow is the stronger individual, the bigger, stronger individual who also, and both of them are accurate as hell, right? And maybe a strength for Burrow, but again, they both play for really strong teams and really strong supporting cast. Burrow has a slightly better average, better numbers under pressure than Tua does, but it's still like they're, each of these guys are top five in virtually every offensive category. And like, it's not to say I'm saying they're both going to be Hall of Famers, they're both going to be great, but just trying to find clear distinctions between the two to see which one is better, it's very difficult.
With me, one thing I look at in young players is the technique. And if a young player is able to have great technique, then I think that is going to be a number one carryover that can help them have early success in the NFL at any position. And one thing when I look at Tua that just jumps out is just his technique. This kid is just so technically sound as far as first and foremost, just understanding what defenses are trying to do as far as coverages, and then being able to, within a split second, decipher, you know, the coverages once the ball is snapped. And then, to me, here's the kicker. The way he's able to manipulate safeties and linebackers just by moving his hips so quickly.
That's a good call, yeah.
And, again, that's all a technique. And I haven't really seen Joe Burrow do that on a consistent basis. Now, maybe he does that tomorrow. I'm anxious to see. But with young players, the reason why so many young players are able to have success at the next level right away is because – they're technically sound. And Tua, to me, the kid is just technically sound. And I know people may want to say his ankles, this and that, he's small and his arm's not that strong. But listen, the kid is a technician. And listen, with someone being a technician, to me, that's a safe pick. And I just feel like Tua is just far, far ahead of anybody else in this class when it just comes to playing with technique on a consistent basis.
And for anyone to say his arm isn't strong, it's just not correct. Like, you see some of the throws he makes when he's at the far hash and he throws all the way across to the opposite sideline. And to make a throw like that, you have to have a strong arm.
To.
Like, otherwise, you're going to get picked off, or it's going to be a really risky throw. And you see him make a lot of those throws, and you have to have an incredibly strong arm to do that. Because I think a throw like that is like a better gauge than even a deep ball. Because when you're throwing a deep ball, it's more about timing and you can have more air under the ball and hang it up. But when you're making that, the throw from the far hash to the other sideline, that has to have velocity.
And here's my thing with Joe Burrow. I think Joe Burrow can be successful at the next level. But one thing about Joe Burrow that I think a lot of people are starting to ignore as far as the Joe Burrow lovers, Joe Burrow needs to be placed in a system that he's placed in now, because we have seen that he has had great success in this system. Because if you go back to Joe Burrow last year and it was a different system, he didn't have this this success. And you may argue about Tua. Well, let me tell you this. Tua in 2017, when he entered the national championship game, he had a different coordinator. In 2018, he had a brand new coordinator. And then now in 2019, he has Steve Sarkisian, a brand new offensive coordinator. So to me, Tua, you can place him in any system, and he has shown that he can be successful. You can't say that about Joe Burrow. And again, I'm not trying to knock Joe Burrow. I'm just giving you facts here. Like, you just can't say that about Joe Burrow. So I think Joe Burrow can be a success at the next level if he's in a system like he's in right now.
By the way, Hurricanes basketball, they lead FAU at home 67-50, under 5 minutes to play in the second half. So I'm going to call it right now, Rashad. Time of death for FAU. It is 8:38 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Miami's going to get this dub.
I believe so. They better.
Yeah, I got to do a favor for Vlad again. We did this on Wednesday. So this is a special shout-out. If this person happens to be listening, and make sure I get this right, Vlad, whoever was the Tool of the Week winner,
yes,
from the Zaslow and Amber show,
yes,
on Tuesday,
yes,
we need you to call our studio line.
Yes. I have your name.
Yeah.
I have the city you won, or you're from. Just need your number and address.
What city are they from?
I don't want to say, because if they...
Well, yeah, because they could fake it. Okay,
some people
fair
can
enough.
Fake it.
Fair
so
enough.
What I need them to do, they need to call, say their name, and what was the... who they nominated as Tool of the Week.
Okay.
Because the winner was selected by... because Zaslow and myself agreed on who that Tool of the Week was. This was on Tuesday, Zaslow and Amber's show. I was running the board for that show. And I lost a piece of paper with his information.
And we need that person to claim their prize.
Yeah, because you have a nice prize. Yeah. You have a nice prize that you need to pick up, because that prize is for next week. And, so if you're listening in, you know who you are. It was Tuesday, November 5th?
Sounds right.
Correct. Yeah, it was.
November 5th. Yes. So please call.
And I can't emphasize this enough. If you're just like some random guy or lady who just calls in to try to claim the prize, Vlad's gonna know.
I'm gonna know,
because he knows the name. He knows the proper name,
and I know what was said to allow that person to win.
It's fantastic. So Tool of the Week winner from Tuesday. If you're out there and you're listening,
give them the number to call.
Maybe next week the Tool of the Week nominee can be Deion Sanders. Next head football coach at
Florida
State.
That's not happening, guys. That's not happening. Answer me this question. First of all, Deion would have to give up his Under Armour deal.
That's a good point.
Okay. He would have to give up his Under Armour deal. Then he would also have to give up the great work that he does in the NFL Network.
I love him on the NFL Network. I don't want him to leave.
I don't. And he would have to deal with this. I don't think Deion likes talking football. I don't think Deion wants to be, like, every day involved with football.
Because, like, my thing is, if you are that gifted at – being a pundit and a commentator, and you can make as much money as Deion Sanders does doing a minimal amount of work,
because
you compare that to the work that goes into coaching, right? So I just have a hard time understanding. And obviously there are exceptions to this rule, like John Gruden, who clearly just had the itch to coach, right? I just have a hard time understanding who someone who has the gift of gab and has such a personality and is so good on TV and makes so much money being on TV like Deion Sanders would want to give up a relatively easy gig like that for the grind of going to coach, especially at your alma mater. Mm-hmm. Because when you have legendary status at your alma mater the way that Deion Sanders does, one of the most beloved Florida State Seminoles of all time, you have legendary status like that, don't you risk tarnishing your legacy if you go there and fail as a head coach?
Yes, but the only – I don't think it would be as difficult for Deion. I'm going to tell you why. Because I think Deion, and I'm not trying to compare Deion Sanders to this next person, so I don't want the texters or the listeners to think I am, but I know players that played at Florida State with Bobby Bowden. And they said that Bobby Bowden rarely coached. His coordinators did the job. And okay. He was like the spectator. Like okay. He kind of just set up high and just, you know, looked, you know, down on the team. And, you know, he just kind of went around from, you know, drill to drill and just kind of, again, really didn't say much. And then, you know, he addressed the team after practice. And, of course, you know, he addressed the team in the meetings. But all those players said that they were always coached by whoever their coordinators were. So I could see Deion being pretty much a face. Now, Bobby was a great recruiter because that's what Bobby was good at. And Deion, to me, has always had the relationship with not only former players, but, you know, the players that are currently there. And I could see Deion being a good recruiter just because of he's prime time. And, yeah. You know, like, to me, Deion is very personable. And I could see Deion, if he happens to land that job, bringing in his own coordinators because he has a lot of relationships in the NFL. So I could see Deion possibly going to, you know, a defensive assistant here or an offensive assistant there and kind of saying, listen, I want you to be each of my coordinators. So I don't think the job description would be that hard for Deion because I could see Deion kind of being more of just, you know what, I'm just going to deal with the personalities and recruiting and you guys deal with the X's and O's. Now, the tough part for Deion would be probably game managing during the game because yeah. I don't know. Again, I don't know if that's something he's done to that degree before.
But also, like, aren't there so many more? And because, like, there are certain things you can delegate, sure.
Uh-huh.
But as a head coach, don't you also have to deal with headaches like guys being academically eligible?
Very true. Uh-huh.
You have to be, you know, the CEO overseeing the recruiting mm-hmm. staff and the operations staff. Like, can you delegate all that stuff?
You know, that's something that would be tough on any coach. But again, when I look at Deion has always been a personable type of guy. And I could see Deion being able to get through to some knuckleheads that may not want to go to class or being able to walk in a household and say, listen, you know, I'm prime time and I'm pretty sure that household is going to know that, you know, and I'm pretty sure that kid is going to sit down and just kind of be, I don't want to say mesmerized, but say to himself, like, wow, like this is prime time, like the Deion Sanders sitting on my couch trying to recruit me to come to Florida State. So I can see it happening. I don't think it's far-fetched, but I think you made a great point the last time we talked about it. Is this something that Deion wants to deal with? Because it is going to be, I don't want to say a lot of work, just more work that he's used to.
Well, especially because, and again, it's hard for me to understand because he's got such a cushy gig right now.
Exactly.
And because, like, it's a lot, and I'm not to say that what we do for a living or what Deion does uh-huh. for a living is easy. It's yeah. not. But I imagine what we're doing right now is a lot easier than being the head coach of a major college football program.
Absolutely.
And guess what? Deion's making a lot more money doing what he's doing than we are doing what we're doing right now. Newsflash. So it's just hard for me to see him giving that up.
Yeah.
Got another big game tomorrow, Miami hosting Louisville Senior Day. We're going to talk with Andrew Ivins from State of the U. Or excuse me, not State. I don't want to give out the wrong website. Inside the U. Andrew Ivins from Inside the U and 247 Sports will join us next. Alex Dono and Rashad Butler with you. Vlad on the other side of the glass, taking it up till 9:30 tonight. Some Heat basketball. It's a big one. I'm going to be like prying my eyes open tonight to stay up till 1 in the morning. I hate the West Coast so much. I mean, I like the West Coast. I hate the West Coast time zone. Like they should just suck it up uh-huh. and use the same time we do.
You know what's weird? So I played over there a few times in my career, not a lot, but it was always so weird going over there and coming from Houston where we play on Central Time. So a lot of our games are at 12 noon, which is like the 1 o'clock block on the East Coast.
Right.
And playing Oakland and I played the Chargers when they were in San Diego a few years. It's crazy, like, waking up and playing at 1 o'clock. And, you know, again, you're thinking that, okay, you know, we're part of that early block game, but you're not. Like, you're part of the 4, you know, p.m. block
yeah,
game.
True.
But it feels so yeah. awkward because you're so used to being a part of that early block of games playing in Houston and so forth.
Don't turn into Zaslow. Zaslow said the same exact thing.
He did?
Week. He said that everybody should have one time zone.
Yeah, the one true time zone.
No.
I mean, listen,
I disagree.
If people in Europe want to have their time zones, but I think in America, you pick one time you go.
No,
with.
No. That's the beauty of the West Coast.
Well, okay, listen, Vlad, if we move to the West Coast time, that works as well, but we should all be on the same time.
No, I love being able to watch a 1 o'clock game at 10 a.m. and a 4:30 game at 1:30.
Like I used
but
to
a 7:30 game on the West Coast at 10:30 at night, it's too much.
That's
excessive.
Listen, that's on you.
Do you have any children?
No.
Well, there you go. Right there. You don't understand.
There's sacrifices you got to make.
Listen, I used to find it so weird when I was growing up because growing up, if you guys can remember how Monday Night Football on the East Coast didn't start till about 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to myself, that must be weird on the West Coast starting Monday Night Football like at 6 o'clock, like when the sun is still out.
Oh, that would be the best. Well, let's table this conversation because let's talk to our guy, Andrew Ivins from Inside the U 24/7 Sports. Now, Vlad, yeah, I was going to say you better punch that up because the last time I punched up an interview, I screwed up the entire phone system. Andrew, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing good. I don't have any time zone takes, but I do think we need to get rid of daylight savings.
Yes, that is a time zone take, and that's a great take. Daylight, like how many, seriously, it's 2019. How many farmers can't do their thing just on the same time all year? Oh, we're so worried about when the sun comes up. It's ridiculous. Now, I do want to talk some Canes football. I don't just want to sit here and complain for another 3 hours. So Andrew, coming out of the FSU victory, which was a great performance by Miami, how much of what you saw was the Canes really putting on a complete performance versus how much of that was FSU just really not being a good football team?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, I was up there in Tallahassee, and kind of when I had arrived at the stadium, Florida State was walking in at the same time, and that just looked like a pretty deflated group. I mean, I said right away, if Miami is any ounce of life in them, they should be able to win this game. But you have to give credit to Miami for that performance. I think the defense is finally playing like a true Manny Diaz type defense in terms of wrecking havoc in that backfield, making plays. I mean, the defensive line was awesome, and I know Florida State's offensive line isn't that great, but that unit, Greg Russo, Nesta Silvera, I mean, they're all really kind of coming off late. So I don't want to take any credit away from Miami. And on offense, I mean, the offensive line finally looks like they're blocking it and they're starting to play better. So it was, if you're a Miami fan, I mean, there's a lot to be happy about besides probably the fact that Willie Taggart's no longer employed in Tallahassee.
Andrew, what has been the main reason with this resurgence that we've seen from this defensive unit the past few games?
That's a good question. I just think these guys are getting more comfortable, more game experience under their belt. I mean, I know everyone wants to talk about the two senior linebackers, so, I mean, they're kind of the face of this defense, and obviously the guys that have played for so long under Manny Diaz, been in that system, and they'll get recognized Saturday at Senior Day. But if you start looking around at the rest of the guys, there's still kind of some youth. I mean, Gervin Hall, at the end of the day, this is still his first year starting at that safety spot. And, you know, the two corners, Al Blades and DJ Ivy, they've gone through some growing pains. And then on the defensive line, like Greg Russo, I mentioned, Nesto Silvera, those guys are finally have game reps, and it looks like they're playing more confident and faster. So that's, I think, the biggest thing is, I mean, the talent's been there. It just seems like now these guys aren't really thinking and they're just kind of flying around.
We're joined by Andrew Ivins from Inside the U. Andrew, any debate that Miami fans were trying to have about Jaren Williams versus Nakosi Perry, that's now dead, right? It's Jaren Williams all the way after last week.
Absolutely. I mean, I thought it was – I don't want to say it was risky that Manny Diaz kind of tabbed him as the guy after that Pittsburgh game, but he really needed Jaren Williams to win against Florida State, I think. I mean, he's since fall camp kind of concluded, Jaren Williams been Manny Diaz's guy, and yeah, you know, he beat Bethune-Cookman in Central Michigan, but he really hadn't won a big game, and we finally saw Jaren step up and make some big throws. I mean, the long ball to Jeff Thomas in the first half, the one to D. Wiggins in the second half, those were great throws. I also thought the one he put on a line to Mike Harley, I mean, we're finally seeing what he could be as a quarterback, especially if he has time in that pocket. I mean, he's a pretty accurate passer. I think Nakosi probably still has a better arm, but Jaren doesn't make bad decisions. So, I think we can kind of put that to rest, assuming, you know, knock on wood, Jaren doesn't get hurt or anything like that, but this seems like it's Jaren's team.
In your opinion, I know Dan Enos is very, very hard on his quarterbacks, and in specific, Jaren Williams. What do you think is the next progression in his game to, I guess, take him to the next level, so when next year rolls around, we're seeing a very polished Jaren Williams?
I think that would be maybe taking maybe some more risky, making more risky decisions. I mean, I still think at the end of the day, he holds onto the ball a lot longer. I mean, Pro Football Focus has this stat where it's time in pocket. And I think Jaren Williams, as of last week, I mean, he held the ball longer than any other quarterback in the ACC. So I think there needs to be a time when he kind of needs to get rid of it, and then maybe that'll help out his offensive line. So that would be the biggest thing for me. I mean, I would say, you know, getting a Power 5 win under his belt, and he did that this past weekend against Florida State. I would say maybe engineering a game-winning drive, and he did that again at Pittsburgh. So it's starting to really click for him. I think we just need to see him play consistently. That's probably the one thing as well, consistency.
You know, Rashad asked you about Miami's defensive upturn, how well these guys are playing, and they're going up against a pretty good offense tomorrow. Louisville, you know, Mikael Cunningham can make plays. They've got receivers who can make plays. Tutu Atwell is really good. So how do you see them matching up with Miami's D? How many problems are they going to create?
It's going to come down to Miami, I think, tackling in space. I mean, Louisville, they don't have a great offensive line. Like, if you look at some of the offensive line kind of metrics I use, I mean, this unit is probably right around where Florida State was. And what do I mean by that? I mean, they give up a lot of sacks. But they're going to try to get the ball into space. Tutu Atwell, you just brought him up. If anyone's listening, I mean, he's a guy. He used to be the quarterback at Miami Northwestern. He's kind of a youth legend star here. Well, now he's working in the slot. He's a guy who's very dangerous with the ball in his hand. Same with Javion Hawkins, their running back. He's from the Space Coast. So I think it's going to come down to Miami, that, you know, containing these guys, much like they did against Florida State. I mean, Florida State really try to get that ball outside the numbers, and Miami did a good job of cleaning it up. What they can't have happen is what we saw against Georgia Tech. I mean, that was the game when they had 29 missed tackles, which, I don't know, I keep going back and saying to myself, like, what happened there? I mean, that was just a sloppy game all around, and it's really an anomaly here in Manny Diaz's tenure. So if they can tackle, I think, and contain some plays, I think they're going to have a chance to really, you know, have a similar type performance in terms of creating pressure on that quarterback and getting some sacks.
Now, I'm going to ask you a incomplete question, and I just want you to answer the question as if the season was already concluded. What would be your grade on Manny Diaz as far as how he handled this team so far this year and how they responded to the way he has handled this team this year?
I would go probably a B. If you asked me this question, you know, a few weeks ago, I probably would have been a little bit lower than that. But I do think what we saw at Pittsburgh and what we saw against Florida State, like, that should be attributed to coaching. He seems to have righted the ship a little bit after some difficult losses. You know, I thought there was a chance, a time when this team might shut down and really stop playing hard. But it seems like these guys are fighting, and once you get one of those wins, it's easy to get a second one, and we'll see if this thing snowballs. I mean, I think there's honestly a good chance they could beat Louisville. Then you have a bye week, beat FIU, and then beat Duke, and then we'll all forget about those kind of that Georgia Tech game and the Virginia Tech game. So I give it some credit to the coaching. I also think, like I said earlier, this team's just getting more experience, and you know, there's only one senior on offense, and it's taking time for some of these guys to kind of just get comfortable in there.
We're joined by Andrew Ivins, who covers the Miami Hurricanes and recruiting for Inside the U on 247 Sports. And on the topic of recruiting, you know, not only did Miami get a convincing win over Florida State, which I imagine is good for recruiting, but Florida State fired their head coach afterwards. And, you know, even if Willie Taggart was not popular among the fan base, anytime a team fires a coach, it's always going to have an impact on players who were committed to play for that coach. So how has Miami benefited from the victory and the Taggart firing, and how much is this hurting Florida State right now?
To be honest, Alex, you know, I'm surprised how aggressive Miami has gotten. You know, it's easy for us to sit here and be like, well, you guys should go after it and target all these Florida State commits. But a lot of staffs really won't do that, you know, in the middle of the season. And Miami has. I mean,
wow.
Florida State, I think they have, I mean, they had roughly 15 kids committed, and Miami was probably in contact with six or seven of them that Sunday when news broke that Taggart was out. So Miami, the bulk of their class is in place. You know, they got 22 verbal commitments right now with the early signing period. It's probably 6 weeks away. But they're going to try to upgrade at certain positions if they can. I mean, the first Florida State kid they absolutely like, but they're not the only ones that smell blood in the water. Up and down that Florida State commit list, just trying to see who's interested and see who they can get on campus.
We're joined by Andrew Ivins from Inside the U, 247 Sports. Going back to the Louisville game tomorrow, do you have a prediction? You know, it sounds like you're pretty bullish on Miami's chances, but how do you see it playing out?
I think on a podcast I said 28-20 or 17 or something like that. I think Miami's going to win. It's just hard for me to predict a big runaway win just based on what we've seen. I kind of said it after the first start of the season. I said to myself, I'm going to predict most of these games to be close kind of moving forward just because I think that's where Miami's offense is at right now. I mean, how can we sit here and be like, oh, they're going to score 35 points? I mean, you guys got to do it before I got to see it before I believe it. So I think it'll be close, but I do think Miami should win this game. Like, matchup-wise, this looks pretty good for Miami, assuming they don't turn the ball over a bunch.
I got one more for you. Maybe a few people are aware that there is another relatively big game happening during Miami against Louisville. Maybe people haven't heard, but Alabama and LSU will also be playing at 3:30 tomorrow. Do you have a pick there, Bama or the Tigers?
Oh, I mean, I'm lucky if I get to watch, you know, another game on Saturday, just kind of with our responsibilities for Miami. I'm going with Nick Saban in Alabama, though. I mean, if I'm a betting man, which I am, it's pretty hard to bet against Nick Saban coming off a bye week. So I think the under is a probably good play. It's like at 63 points, but I'm riding with Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide.
Fair enough. It's hard to argue that. He's Andrew Ivins. You want to follow him on Twitter at Andrew_Ivins and check out his work at InsideTheU.com. He does a great job covering recruiting for 247 Sports. Andrew, thank you so much and enjoy the game tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll see you there. Enjoy your Friday, guys.
Thank you.
He's getting some love on the text line at 67974. I'm down to get rid of daylight savings time, a texter writes.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I thought that was probably a little bit more reasonable than me wanting four time zones to combine into one, because there are four time zones in this very large country we live in.
Because I think the only state that doesn't fall back or fall ahead is Arizona, correct?
God bless them. Yeah. You're right. Arizona. Uh-huh. Arizona does not believe in daylight savings.
Yeah, correct.
I mean, Arizona just decided, I don't care what you guys do, we're just going to have one time all year. Uh-huh. We're going to stick with it. And God bless them.
I love it, yeah.
I mean, I've never been to Arizona, but I want to live there just hearing about this. Yeah. They don't recognize daylight savings time. And also somebody reacted to, you know, what he said about Miami being really aggressive calling up Florida State commits after the Taggart firing. Miami shooting their shot.
Oh, yeah, right. You have to.
And I like it. Apparently a lot of teams don't do that. So we'll continue this conversation on the other side. Alex Donnell, Rashad Butler, and Vlad Lusant with you. You're listening to 790 The Ticket. You used to call me on my cell phone late night when you need my love. Thanks again to Andrew Ivins from Inside the U for joining us. Alex Donnell alongside Rashad Butler taking you up until 9:30 tonight. Heat pregame, Heat at Lakers this evening. Should be a great matchup.
Oh, yes.
Well, before, I want to get into a really interesting text that came in, a conspiracy theory.
Okay.
And an unbelievable story about James Harden. But before we get to all that, it's time for some headlines.
This is WAXYAM South Miami and WSFSFM HD2 Miramar, a radio.com sports station.
Got a final score at the Watsco Center. Miami Hurricanes got their first dub of the season.
They called it.
Yeah, they beat FAU. I mean, it wasn't that hard to call, just to be fair. But Miami did beat FAU 74-60. Rodney Miller for the Canes, 12 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists in the win. Miami Heat, as I mentioned, taking on the Lakers tonight, 10:30. 9:30 pregame with Zaslow coming up. The Dolphins facing the Colts on the road this Sunday, 4:05 p.m. kickoff on our sister station, 560 The Joe. What do you make of this conspiracy theory, Rashad? Texter writes in at 67974. Do you think that Florida State is just throwing it out there that Deion Sanders might be the next head coach to get some of the players from decommitting?
Absolutely.
That's got to happen, right?
Correct.
And it's not to say that that's 100% why it's happened. Like, maybe Deion Sanders really does want to coach Florida State. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I could totally see scenarios where when you've just fired a head coach, you know, in two-thirds, three-fourths the way through the season, or I think two-thirds through the season in this case, you got to have some damage control, right? And why it serves a couple of different purposes when these rumors go out there as to who might take over, right? Because maybe Deion Sanders just wants his name in the news, right? Just wants the publicity. I don't know. But it also serves Florida State for names to be out there, to get fans excited, to get the pitchforks a little bit less out there, and maybe and I don't know if he's necessarily saving all these recruits, but maybe the recruits will see a sense that, you know what, something big's going to happen here.
You know, I could see it because I remember when I was going to Miami, so I was recruited by Butch Davis, and that same year he left for Cleveland, and I remember when I got home that day after hearing it. The news was broke to me when I was in the cafeteria at my high school eating lunch that Butch was leaving. And I thought, I'm like, no, he's not leaving. I'm like, this guy just actually sat on my couch like not even like a week ago and
really?
Told me. Yeah, so him and Pete Garcia, they came to my house, sat on my couch. You know, my parents did the whole ordeal. You know, we made them some food and, you know, we talked football. We just talked life and things of that nature. I'm thinking like, this guy's not leaving because he told me that he wasn't leaving. And I was in the cafeteria eating, and one of my friends, he was like, are you still going to Miami? I'm like, of course. He's like, are you sure? I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I'm positive. He's like, well, your coach just left. I'm like, no, he didn't. He's like, he actually just left. And I remember I went to the same high school my dad worked at, and I went to my dad's classroom immediately. I'm like, is Butch leaving? My dad's like, I didn't really hear the news. So I got home, and that's when I found out, and I remember hearing reports of, at the time, I think it was Barry Alvarez, just because Donna Shalala was very, exactly.
She had been president of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I remember, like, my dad, he was like, so what are you going to do? I'm like, listen, I don't know anything about Barry Alvarez, and if it is true, then I'm probably going to, like, decommit. And I kid you not, the next day, you start to hear reports about Coach Coker.
Yeah.
And I think my whole entire recruiting class went from being unsure to sure again. So I could see a report like that being thrown out there to just keep recruits from decommitting, because, again, it's possible. Because, like I said, when I heard the rumors of Barry Alvarez, I was like, Barry Alvarez, like, I mean, again, I don't know anything about this guy. Like, I'm not coming to Miami to play for Barry Alvarez. Yeah. Like, I'll decommit immediately if he is named the head coach. And then, luckily, Coach Coker, he got on the phone, called me. I want to say, like, the next day, he's like, you know, they're probably going to name me the head coach. I spoke with the athletic department. They're getting the paperwork done and blah, blah, blah. And before you know, I think a day later, he was actually named the head coach and kept me on board and kept a lot of my my class on board.
And so you can imagine if it didn't happen that way. And for people to – and, you know, people criticize Larry Coker a lot. It got away from him a little bit late in his tenure, but mm-hmm. – I have no doubt in my mind that he was the right man for 2001.
Absolutely.
And I think what you said perfectly illustrates the idea that if they had done something completely off the board, like bringing Barry Alvarez here, and to Larry Coker, you know, you were in high school at the time and you were relieved to know he was taking over. The current players on the roster really stood up for him. Like, they all went to the athletic director's
Correct.
Office. And like,
I remember that. Like, I heard about that.
Like, you have to make this Larry Coker. Coker's got to be the guy.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I don't know, because, you know, it was a different era back in 2000. So I don't know, like, how many guys would have sought transfers. Mm-hmm. Like, if that were to happen now,
that's true.
Like, half the team would be in the portal, right?
Yeah.
But it was a different mentality back then. Guys might have said, uh-huh. you know what, I'm going to stick with my school.
Yeah.
But it, certainly recruiting-wise, it would have had an impact. So you have to wonder if that 01 national title would have even happened.
Correct, because in my recruiting class alone, I'll give you some names. We had guys like Antrell Roll, Kellen Winslow Jr., Sean Taylor, Frank Gore, Roscoe Parrish, Roger McIntosh. We had some absolute studs in my recruiting class. So just imagine if it was Barry Alvarez and not Coach Coker, I think a lot of us would have decommitted, because I think a lot of us came to Miami just because of how good of a recruiter Butch Davis was. And, you know, he came to a lot of our schools and a lot of our houses. So, yeah.
Let me bring you this, an unbelievable NBA-related story. We are heading into an NBA broadcast, so I think it's appropriate.
Okay.
I stumbled across a story in the Miami Herald, and you know, the report is written by C. Isaiah Smalls II. But, you know, he takes this from an internet report. This is unbelievable. God bless Reddit. So an NBA super fan found out that he has data to back this up. James Harden performs worse in cities with great strip clubs. Hey, that's taking the South Beach flu to another level.
It is.
A Redditor. You ever spend time on Reddit? I love Reddit.
No, I haven't.
I go on there, and I don't even use Reddit for sports. I use Reddit for, like, TV shows I want to understand. Okay. But a Reddit, it's NBA Reddit is huge. A Redditor recently found a direct connection between James Harden's play in away games and the city's quality of strip clubs. The better the Canadian ballet, they call it, I guess that's like a euphemism for strippers, the worse the 7-time All-Star plays, and what city was found to have the best strippers? The 305. So how about that? Miami is king. So I'm not going to go into all the details, because I read this whole story during our last commercial break, and it gets very deep with, like, the numbers and the statistics.
Wow.
So maybe if you want to, like, check it. But this guy really did his research. This guy on Reddit.
Good for him.
Really, Ryan Sullivan is the name of the guy who came up with this data. He really did his research. So, you know, you can either search for this on Reddit because it's all over the internet, or if you want to read the Herald write-up on it, MiamiHerald.com. But it's pretty remarkable how he breaks down this, because he went through, like, the reviews for which cities have the highest reviewed strip clubs, and Miami came out number one, but he performs worse based on the cities with the best strip clubs. And take that information for what you will.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Atlanta has to be up there.
It's got to be.
Yeah, and it's funny because the place he plays in, Houston has some really good strip clubs too.
Ah, that's right. You played there before.
Yeah, exactly. I love Houston, H-Town.
Oh, my God.
Shout out Houston.
That's very interesting. And, again, it's not even like – I don't even know for a fact that he spends a lot of time at strip clubs.
Same here. I don't either.
But God bless this person who figured out there is a correlation between, you know, the cities he performs worst in basketball-wise and the quality of the strip club. So that's pretty remarkable. We're taking you up until Heat pregame in under 10 minutes. Miami and Louisville tomorrow. You have a prediction, Rashad, because I'm thinking 31-21 Miami. And part of my thinking is Louisville's offense, 110th in the country in sacks given up.
Mm-hmm.
And Miami has just been on a tear. Greg Rousseau and company sacking quarterbacks. So I think Miami is going to do some damage sacking the quarterbacks. Because Louisville's offensive line is not very good, and we are seeing Miami's offense. Jaren Williams is playing at his highest level. I think Miami will win this game and will cover the spread. I've got Miami by 10. What about you?
Okay. I am going to go. I do think Miami is going to win. 34-17. I think this defense is going to continue to play aggressive. I think the front four is going to continue to cause havoc on the opposing team's quarterback. And I do think the secondary is getting better each and every week. And I think Louisville, due to the speed that they have, a lot of South Florida kids, I think they're going to make some plays here and there, but I just don't think it's going to be enough. And I just don't think they're going to be able to make those plays on a consistent basis. So I'm going to go Miami 34, Louisville 17.
I like it. That would take some of my stress away if they win by 17 again. That'll do it for us. Rashad Butler, great work, my friend, as always. And you're on Canes postgame tomorrow with
Correct.
Hollywood.
Uh-huh, with Hollywood.
I'll be on pregame with Brian Monroe, so 11:30 a.m. for me, and probably around, I imagine you guys will probably start around like 7 tomorrow?
7:30
uh-huh. tomorrow?
7:30 to 9:30.
Good. And Vlad did excellent work on the other side of the glass. Heat pregame, Heat Lakers, go Heat tonight. Coming your way next.